You're listening to the Woman's Hour Power List from BBC Radio 4. Now to Dido Harding, who's the Woman's Hour Power Lister and the boss of TalkTalk, the landline and broadband provider. She's been the CEO for just over 3 years. After a career that's taken her from Oxford to management consultancy at McKinsey, and then on to Thomas Cook, Woolworth, Tesco and Sainsbury's. In 2012, TalkTalk did top Ofcom's complaint chart, but it now has about 4 million customers and was the first internet service provider to develop a comprehensive pornography filter. Last week, Dido told the Commons Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee that this was the generation that must make the internet safer for children. Dido, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I know that you've had to sit with me and listen to the previous interview, and of course what Raven made clear there was that her awful experience happened before the internet, very much so, but she did also say that she believes that the internet facilitates child abuse. What do you say about that?
I think it's very hard to sit and listen to that interview without feeling rather helpless and pathetic in what you do with your life in comparison with what Raven is getting on and doing with her life now. I think the internet is no different from the physical world. It has a wealth of wonderful things and a wealth of horrors as well. And as a chief executive of an internet service provider, I feel very clearly and heavily the weight of responsibility to help our customers navigate that amazing world, but also navigate the perils within it, and to give people the tools to help there.
So you developed your comprehensive pornography filter, and how many of your customers have taken advantage of it?
Yeah, I should say our filter is not just for pornography. In fact, the most frequently blocked category of HomeSafe is suicide and self-harm. I don't think there's a parent on the planet that wants their children to be accessing suicide and self-harm sites. So we've had the product HomeSafe in place for 2.5 years now. 1.2 million of our customers use it. 400,000 of those have actively applied filters. Of our new customers, every new customer is asked to look at HomeSafe and decide which filters they want to turn on, and roughly 30% of our new customers turn the filters on.
Okay, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that still the overwhelming majority don't?
They don't, but remember that only a third of households have children in it, so we're actually pretty pleased that 30% of new customers turn that on, because we would be a pretty good representation of the household structure in the UK.
So you think that the majority of households with young children have taken advantage?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I wonder whether you think that maybe there's the chance that superficially in public life, on places like Radio 4 and in the newspapers and in the editorials and opinion columns, there's a lot of hand-wringing about the dangers of the internet. And in private, we all do and think something else.
I think that it is an issue that an awful lot of people are genuinely worried about, confused about, don't quite know what to do.
But is there an element of hypocrisy here? Do you
no, think? I really don't think so. I actually think it's a thoroughly good thing that the politicians are shining a light on it. You know, I've said before that I think that internet safety is the sort of road safety of our generation. When I grew up, you know, we had clunk-click advertising. I remember the Green Cross man coming to school. Seatbelts had just been invented. There was no airbag. And you've had this wealth of technological innovation, but also education and public awareness, that means that I know exactly how to help my children be safe on the road. We need to do the same for internet safety. We can't make it perfect, we can't make it safe, full stop, but we can make it safer by encouraging companies like mine and my competitors to develop the right technology, by making sure that the education curriculum covers internet safety. It's really good news that the primary curriculum is going to include internet safety. For example, we've just helped the Brownies develop a computer coding badge that has internet safety at its core.
Well, not before time, I'm sure, but of course that doesn't mean that parents can think, oh well, that's fine, that's being taken care of for me.
Absolutely. I actually think the most important thing for parents in terms of internet safety is to talk to your children. You talk to your 11-year-old if he was at the front door about to go out, and you'd say, where are you going, what are you doing, who are you doing it with, when will you be back? you need to have the same sorts of conversations with your children about their online life and not be afraid to engage, listen to what they're doing.
What about you as an organisation then? Because you're relatively small, isn't it? You are relatively small, I should say, and you have to compete with the bigger girls and boys. You're also the most complained about landline provider, according to Ofcom.
As I'm 5 foot two, I imagine my friends listening to this programme are chuckling at me being relatively small.
5 foot two is tall, Dido, but anyway, carry on.
Talk is small, you're right, in that, relatively speaking, we are a company, our turnover is just under £2 billion. That makes us small compared to BT or Sky or Google, you know, the likes of the companies that we compete with and deal with. We have 4 million customers in the UK, and you're absolutely right that our history is full of not brilliant service.
Mm. And has that got better?
Yes, it has. And Ofcom themselves say that. So if you look at this is not a great measure, by the way, but if you look at the number of customers who complain to Ofcom, that has reduced really dramatically over the last 3 years. We're a small company that's also very young. We began life in 2006 with the launch of free broadband, and from 2006 to 2010 we acquired 4 million customers. That's enormously rapid growth.
Well, perhaps too rapid.
Yes, I think in all honesty. And we spent, you know, several years coping with that growth and trying to do a better job for our existing customers. That's exactly what we are now doing, and over the course of the last year we've started growing again.
We've talked a lot on this programme about getting women on board, the importance of getting more and more women on board. What do you think about that, and what particularly, specifically, do you make of non-execs, female non-execs on board?
I mean, I might take a slightly politically incorrect view on this, which is I actually think it's much more important to focus on the executive pipeline in businesses rather than the non-executive.
So the non-exec is a kind of sop, is it?
Well, no, it's just that when I get my sort of 20-something, 30-something high potential women together, and I'm pleased to say I've got lots of them in TalkTalk, and I ask them, what do you want for, you know, your careers? They don't say they want to be the non-executive director of a company. They say they want my job. And I think it's much more important that we're developing real talent and diversity in the teams that run the company day to day.
So the danger would be that women, talented women, are made into kind of generalists, that they're allowed to be non-execs on a variety of boards when in fact they should have focused years ago on getting to the top of one organisation.
Well, I think that, bluntly, where the real power in organisations lie is the people who are running it day to day. Non-executives are there to temper that power, but not to make the day-to-day decisions. And so if you want to have real diversity in the leadership of an organisation, you want to have great, you know, women, gay men, ethnic minorities coming up through the executive ranks.
Yeah, so you have to say gay women as well, by the way.
Yes, I should.
Yeah, well, I better, apologies, just in case people will be offended by it. Well, not offended, but, you know, they'll think, okay, well, what about all very well gay men?
Correct.
What about gay women?
Absolutely correct.
The whole the question of executive pay, that's a hot topic, and you're interesting because you actually say, do you know what? We're worth it. I'm not ashamed. You do earn a lot of money. I've got the figures for July of 2012. Salary of £1.4 million and a bonus. And on top, shares worth £1.8 million. Is that right?
We can go through the figures, but fundamentally you're right, I'm extremely well paid.
Why shouldn't you be?
Well, the thing about being the chief executive of a publicly quoted company is that is completely public information. Everything I earn is documented publicly. My customers and shareholders get to see that, so do my employees, and my shareholders decide whether that's a fair wage. And that's not for me to decide, actually. And I'm thoroughly in favour of that transparency. It keeps me very honest. Every time I'm in a call centre talking to my employees, they know how much I earn, and, you know, they will only follow me if they think that I'm taking good decisions and leading the company appropriately and that they're benefiting from it.
But you don't believe in a kind of hand-wringing attitude towards the amount of money you're paid?
Which, no.
I think it's refreshing.
I don't. I think that one of the great challenges of Britain, and I love this country, is that we're really good at slagging off success. And if we want to have a growing economy, we want to have thriving, successful, growing businesses and people who aspire to lead them because they do well as a result. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, provided there's complete transparency and your customers, shareholders and colleagues get to see.
So people will know about you as the head of TalkTalk and your previous, quite a very glittering career, actually. But you were a jockey, and not just any old jockey. You were a good jockey, and you had that amazing experience. Well, you tell us about Cool Dawn, because that wasn't just any old horse.
Well, I'm not sure I was. If I was a really good jockey, I'd be a jockey, because actually that is my first love.
This is the first bit of modesty you've thrown into the interview. I knew it would come eventually. That's typical women, but go on, David.
No, the reason I'm not a really good jockey, I bought Cool Dawn when I was 25 to ride myself in amateur races, and I did. I had some fantastic times on him. I rode him at Cheltenham. I was second on him in the amateurs equivalent of the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and I won a race at Ascot on him. It was all amazing, but I lost the ride on my own horse, which is quite an achievement.
And how did that happen?
Well, he just got very good, and the difference between being a really good amateur at any sport and being a good professional is as big as being totally unable to do something and being a good amateur. So you have Tony McCoy, who hopefully today will have his 4,000th winner. I rode 25 winners in 20 years, and that made me a pretty adequate amateur jockey.
But you are comparing yourself to Tony McCoy.
I am indeed, but in the Cheltenham Gold Cup, do you want Tony McCoy on your horse or do you want me? And the sad truth is the trainer pointed out that Tony, or in fact one of his colleagues, Andrew Thornton, would do a better job. And he duly did.
Yeah, but Tony McCoy couldn't run talk-talk. I know you'll probably say he wouldn't want to, but that's not the point. Would you let your children ride?
Yes, my youngest daughter rides now. I try very hard not to push my passions onto them. I think that's one of the biggest challenges as a parent. Just because I love it doesn't mean that they will, and my husband's really hoping that they don't.
Well, he also said that you should give up as well, or you made a deal with him, didn't you?
Yes, I made a very stupid promise in my early 20s. You know, when you're sort of 24 and you think that by the time you're 40 you'll be nearly dead, and I promised John that I would retire from jump racing when I was 40, and it was a horrible shock to discover that I had passed 40 and I'm not nearly dead, and I really wish I could keep doing it. But he rightly points out that it's not a great hobby for a mother of young children who runs a company to be, you know, as they actually said on Radio 4 this morning, a sport where an ambulance follows you all the time because it's so dangerous.
Yes, there is a clue there, isn't there? Right, it's been lovely to meet you, and thank you for being so honest in the conversation. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That is Dido Harding of Talk Talk, and your thoughts on that, or indeed anything else you've heard on Woman's Hour this morning, you can tweet the programme at BBC Woman's Hour, or you can contact us whenever you like via our website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.